Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly, a production of iHeartRadio.
Time now for Fantasy Football Weekly from iHeartRadio, your weekly source for the nation's best fantasy football advice, speculation, and whatever stupid stuff they decide to drop into the show. Now here's your host, Paul Charchian.
Welcome to another edition of Fantasy Football Weekly. I am Paul Charchian, my co-host, as it has been for a while now.
Years.
Matt Harrison. Well, I mean, technically, yes, years. Mm-hmm. Matt Harrison and Brian Johnson. Hello, guys.
Hello, sirs.
Last week, we broke down everything you need to know about the AFC and NFC East. This week, it's the North. We turn to the North.
The Nord.
Yes.
The North remembers.
The North. Is that how that goes?
They do. Yeah.
King of the North. What's King of the North?
That was Jon Snow.
Jon Snow was King of the North. We're going to be kings of the North's AFC and NFC Norths.
I have no idea what you guys are talking about right now.
Correct. We will give you a rundown on how each of the offenses are going to work for the eight teams that comprise the AFC North and the NFC North. And we will answer the question about the riskiest players to draft compared to ADP and the most upside players compared to ADP. We begin with the Baltimore Ravens and what has become one of the most fascinating offenses in the NFL, Brian.
Yeah, and Baltimore added to it in the draft. Obviously drafting J.K. Dobbins, everyone knows that, in the second round.
Yes.
Devin Duvernay, wide receiver in the third, and a couple of guards in the third and fourth round to protect Lamar Jackson. But I really don't want to talk about the running backs or wide receivers when it comes to Baltimore and redraft this year. It's just a very dicey scenario for both.
Hmm.
It's all the two players we're talking about here is Lamar Jackson, of course. Let's start there. And I want to go high level drafting Lamar Jackson in the early rounds. Right now, Fantasy Pros has him as the 19th overall player off the board, quarterback one. So that's mid-second round. Last year, LJax clearly won a lot of people a lot of money.
Yeah.
But you got him in the 9th, 10th, 11th round last year.
Mm-hmm. I did.
He can win you that your league this year with those same numbers. He has the potential to do it, but obviously the price tag is exponentially higher.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a classic case. I was all for LJax, maybe in first overall in redraft a few months ago. I've totally wavered because this is a classic case of he can certainly win your league for you if he puts up those numbers, even though you're paying the first round price tag, but he can lose it for you big time if he doesn't replicate those numbers with the first, second round price tag. So he has obviously the highest risk of any player on the Ravens right now in terms of
because you'll pay the most for him by a long shot compared to any other Raven, right?
Oh yeah. Well,
the rest of them are going at mid round or lower for the most part, except for Mark Andrews.
And that's where I'm going to now. And he has the highest upside, even though he has a pretty hefty price tag himself, 33rd overall, going as tight end three, obviously behind Travis Kelce and George Kittle. Speaking of Travis Kelce and George Kittle, those two combined for 10 touchdowns on 243 targets last season.
Mm.
Mark Andrews scored 10 touchdowns on just 98 effing targets
last year.
Andrews played 15 games last year, only saw 8 targets on 7 occasions.
Hmm.
Here's numbers in those 7 games. He should have seen more. This is where I'm
getting. Still a lot of usage.
It is, but when he had at least 8 targets, he went 8 for 108 and a touchdown. 8 for 112 in a touchdown, 431 in a touchdown, 6 catches, 99 yards, 2 for 39. That's the one dud. Then 6 for 53 and 2 touchdowns and 6 for 93 and 2 touchdowns.
Good things happen when you target Mark Andrews.
Hayden Hurst, obviously gone.
Mm-hmm. So that's a huge factor.
So the usage is going to go up for Andrews. Nick Boyle's still there, of course. Who cares? So if you're going early tight end, I'm going to reach and take Mark Andrews in the second round ahead of Travis Kelce and George Kittle. If I'm going to intend to take them in the first, I will fade Kelce and Kittle because I think Andrews could outscore both of them this year.
So Brian with another tight end zinger right there.
Yeah.
Evan Engram, the number one tight end, and Mark Andrews, number two.
All right, so
I didn't say he was going to be number one.
I'm kidding.
Oh, I know. I was like, I might have said that. I've said it in the past. He could be.
All right, so let's talk more broadly about just how this offense works. Do you see it being materially different than it was last year, where it was the most run-heavy offense in the NFL?
You know,
they're totally going to flip the script and just go Eric Corey out. No, yeah, I think it's going to pretty much be the same, don't
John
you?
John Harbaugh did say just recently that Lamar Jackson's last thing that he needs to get into his game is the deep
downfield passing. And I think that that's something that they've been concentrating on, because it's these corners going single coverage against these wide receivers all the time. And they're throwing eight in the box and trying to spy Lamar Jackson all the time. There, something's got to give there if they want to get this offense to the next level. And Lamar Jackson has come out and said he wants to pass like Patrick Mahomes. This is the next evolution of Lamar Jackson, and maybe he can do it. He's certainly athletic enough to do
it. Well, I'm sure Patrick Mahomes wants to be able to run like Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, you can want it.
Yeah, but
he does not have the natural passing talent
that Mahomes
has, but he's not that far off. And I do think they will. He'll be a better passer in year three than he was in year two. Year two, he was way better than he was in year one. Mm-hmm. So I do believe that we will see more of a balanced offense in Baltimore this year. And I think his receivers are tremendous upside opportunities. You look at where Hollywood Brown fits in now, a second year after missing, played hurt for almost all of last year. Mm-hmm. Now comes into his second year, which is oftentimes when receivers blow up. I'm fascinated by Brown. He costs you so little. And to me, he would be the upside guy for Baltimore. Let's go to Pittsburgh, where Ben Roethlisberger returns. And I think we're assuming we're going to get some normalcy back to an offense that was very inconsistent last year.
Well, let's talk about that offense last year. They finished with the fewest passing yards in the league. They were bottom 10 in rushing yards. They had the seventh fewest points scored, but they did have injuries to Big Ben, James Conner. Juju was a little bit dinged up, and Antonio Brown left the team last year.
Yeah, there was a lot going on in that team.
Yeah, so they were left with Mason Rudolph and... Yeah, that guy, Duck Hodges.
Duck Hodges.
They still did finish 8-8, which is a pretty great testament to Mike Tomlin's coaching ability.
And they were a really underrated defense that was awesome by the second half of last year.
The Minkah Fitzpatrick
it helped.
Acquisition.
They were one game shy of Tennessee for that final wild card spot. And everybody's talking about Tennessee as, possible contenders. Pittsburgh was one game off of their pace.
Right.
But everybody's reliving last year, which is why the Steelers only have two players going in the top 120 of ADP right now. Both of them are going in the fourth round, and that's James Conner, who's going at 44, and Juju Smith-Schuster, who's going at 45, running back 20 and wide receiver 19, respectively. Hmm. So there's a lot of upside on this offense, because it's only been a few years since they were just a high-flying passing offense, and that's why my high-volume target and the guy that I'm looking for in this offense is Ben Roethlisberger. Well over 500 pass attempts in five of his prior six healthy seasons, over 600 pass attempts in two of those five, multiple passing touchdowns in 71% of his games over the last three years.
How about that?
He has the number 9 offensive line, according to Pro Football Focus, who had an 81.6 sex.
That's 81.6.
I want to have
line.
Some of that.
What's the scale on this? How high does it go?
82.
I thought it would top out at 69, but what do I know?
Where's Roethlisberger's ADP right now? Because I bet he's going off the board at like quarterback 22 or 23.
Quarterback 18, but he's going in the 11th round of drafts right now. So I think he's a guy that you can wait on quarterback. He's the 18th quarterback off the board. And there's just a lot of good quarterbacks right now. So that's why he's a guy that I can target. I can go running back, wide receiver, tight end in my first 10 rounds. Then get Roethlisberger in the 11th.
So that's sort of your upside guy who we both think can outperform his ADP quite a bit. Well, let's flip it over in Pittsburgh. What's the player that you're most nervous about compared to ADP?
I think it's James Conner.
It's
got to be. He had more than 15 rushing attempts only twice last season. That's terrible. He managed that feat 7 times in 2018. He's really a pass catcher, but they have Benny Snell there. Mm-hmm. They have Jalen Samuels there. Mm-hmm. They got Anthony McFarland, the new guy there.
Yeah.
All of which could be in play to take touches from James Conner. And I know Pittsburgh's traditionally been a workhorse running back kind of organization.
They just don't have it.
They don't have him right now. So James Conner going into a contract year, they're going to see what they got with these other guys to see if they need to spend another third round pick on a draft. In the draft on another running back, but James Conner's the guy I'm avoiding at all costs.
I couldn't agree more. And I think if there was any lesson to be learned from James Conner last year, and they know it, they can't make him a high volume guy, because every time they did give him the ball more than a handful of times, he got hurt. I mean, it was all but guaranteed. So I don't think there's any scenario here where he turns back into a workhorse because they won't let him out of fear that he'll keep getting hurt. Yeah. Which is what happened last season.
Two more guys I want to mention on that offense. Deontay Johnson.
Yeah, baby.
His trajectory is just skyrocketing in ADP. Everybody loves him.
And Eric Ebron.
He's going off, right? He's going off at 123 right now, wide receiver 49. That's going to be, he's going to be up two or three rounds in ADP mm-hmm. by the time we get to draft season in August.
I'd rather have him than Juju Smith-Schuster.
I think a lot straight of people up, are with you there.
I trust Deontay Johnson more.
And one of your favorite guys last year was Vance McDonald, Church.
Yeah, disappeared.
He had a terrible year, but he's free this year. 279 in ADP. Jeez. Tight end 33.
And he gets Ben back.
Eric Ebron is there.
Yeah.
Who might siphon a few tight end looks.
Unfortunately.
But Vance McDonald wasn't completely terrible before. So he's a free tight end. He's like one of those guys you grab in a best ball league as your second or third tight end.
Let's
go to Cleveland. This is a new offense led by new head coach Kevin Stefanski, and it's going to be run heavy. Stefanski has the highest run rate of any offensive coordinator over the past 2 years. He's got Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. That is the league's best 1-2 punch of running backs.
Was that rate mandated, though?
Well, you know, clearly Mike Zimmer wanted to do that, but you know what? It worked. And yeah. And if he didn't have talented backs, I'd be talking about a real regression sure. in use. But you've got Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. Let's talk about how good they are and how sneaky similar they are in usage, even though they're not built alike and their running game is different. Chubb is the bigger back, but he's shockingly elusive and fast. Chubb was Pro Football Focus's number 2 rated back in elusiveness.
Nice.
Nick Chubb. Now, Hunt, for his part, if we lower Pro Football Focus down to the 44 carries that Hunt had, he only had 44 carries, Hunt becomes the number 2 back in elusiveness. If we're looking at the whole league, if we lower the threshold down to just 44 carries. Mm. So they're both very elusive backs. Obviously, both of them can catch. Hunt is an elite pass catcher, but Chubb is also very good. And before Hunt showed up, Chubb had 3 or more catches in 6 of 8 games. I mean, they weren't afraid to use him that way, and they can continue to throw to Chubb as well. Although Hunt obviously is the better catcher. And really, both guys can do everything. They can run inside. They can run outside. They can catch the ball. They're going to get a ton of use here. In his first year as offensive coordinator last year, first full year, Kevin Stefanski got Kirk Cousins back on track and unlocked his best statistical season of his career. He's got a similar challenge with Baker Mayfield this year, who obviously regressed in most every way last season, but we've seen flashes of greatness from Baker Mayfield, primarily as a rookie, and I think he's got an opportunity to do the same thing here. Now, the running game will click. I think the running game's almost a certainty to be good, and I think that means they'll ask Baker especially to throw less often and in higher percentage plays, rebuild some confidence here. Last year, Mayfield's deep ball passing was terrible. He had a passer rating of 106 as a rookie on deep passes. Last year, that 106 turned into 73 as a passer rating on deep passes. I think Stefanski is going to try fewer calls, more higher percentage plays, and even more on the deeper stuff for higher percentage plays. Now, Stefanski likes to use the run to set up deep shots, and we've mentioned that a couple of times now. Cousins had the NFL's highest passer rating last year on deep passes, the highest on deep passes. Stefanski can unlock some of that deep passing stuff. So, guys, last year, Stephon Diggs was top 10 in depth of target at 15 yards downfield. When you think of depth of target on the Browns, who's going to be the Steph Diggs guy?
It would be Odell.
That'd be Odell Beckham. Can't be Jarvis Landry.
Well, Jarvis Landry is like the Adam Thielen of that team.
Well, he's even shorter. If Thielen can get downfield,
yeah.
Landry never does. So I think Odell remains sneaky viable here and is potentially poised for a nice bounce back season. Tight end Austin Hooper was a big free agent signing. Of course, Stefanski is just middle of the pack for tight end usage, but Hooper is good. And I rolled together Kyle Rudolph's stats and Irv Smith's stats from last year into one guy.
Mm.
And the numbers are exactly what Austin Hooper put up last year. So I think you can look for another good season from Austin Hooper, just like we saw last season. New offensive line is fantastic news for the Browns. They signed Jack Conklin from the Titans, one of the better blocking offensive linemen in free agency. And then they drafted Jedrick Wills in the first round. These are massive upgrades of this offensive line.
Yeah.
I love it. So who's the riskiest player to draft from the Browns? Nobody. They're all undervalued because of what happened last year. But I'm going to give you a name just to give you a name. Jarvis Landry is going off in round five. He has been 4, 5, or 6 touchdowns in every season but one. You know exactly what you're going to get from him.
What about Nick Chubb, though? Remember, I broke it down a couple weeks ago last year. 15 carries inside the 5 for negative 14 yards and 2 touchdowns.
He's just a really good running back. And yes, I have no problem with him.
He's really good, but Kareem Hunt is great.
Well,
Kareem
Hunt is really good. And by ADP, I'd rather spend the fifth rounder on Kareem Hunt at RB 30 off the board.
Oh, yeah. We did a podcast about it a couple weeks ago between the two.
Who's got the most upside for the Browns? It's probably Odell Beckham. Last year's ADP was the start of the second round. Now it's the fifth round. And he's only a couple of spots ahead of Jarvis Landry. People don't like Odell Beckham. I think that's factored into it here a little bit. When we come back, Brian Johnson will detail his favorite team, which is?
Who day?
Cincinnati Bengals. We'll tell you who day are when we come back. Welcome back to Fantasy Football Weekly. Paul Charchian, Matt Harrison, Brian Johnson with you. We're breaking down the teams in the North. The AFC North, the NFC North. We're on Cincinnati. Brian, this is your newly adopted favorite team. And with Joe Burrow now leading what should be an improved passing attack with A.J. Green back, T. Higgins, this has turned into an awfully interesting offense.
By the way, is this the best offensive division in football? Baltimore, Cleveland, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh.
It's pretty interesting.
Pittsburgh is probably the worst offense in this division. They're not terrible.
No. NFC West might be in that conversation.
AFC West, too. It's got some...
maybe Chargers.
Chargers, Chiefs.
All right.
Broncos on the up and up. Anyway.
Right, so now that we've got a new quarterback, we get new talent wide receiver,
It's a brand new team.
It does feel like a bit of a new team, even though it's the same coaching staff. How does this offense going to look? Because it's got to be different than it was last year.
Yeah, it's kind of a star-studded, sexy offense with Burrow at quarterback. Then you got Tyler Boyd, A.J. Green, who we'll talk about a little more very shortly, who's supposedly fully healthy. T. Higgins, who was drafted 33rd overall, who you just mentioned, and Joe Mixon, of course. So this is looking like a fun offense on paper with not a great defense to on the other side of the ball. So for fantasy football purposes, the Browns are almost as sexy as the Bills. Bizarro world we live in, right?
Yeah.
But I'm really worried about Joe Mixon here. He's crept into first round territory, 11th overall, going as RB8. I guess we should start with the holdout. He could hold out. So there's inherent risk right there.
Okay.
He's willing to hold out, he says, if he's not signed to an extension. But hold out aside, let's assume he's not holding out. Hope he doesn't hold out. Joe Mixon was kind of a Jekyll and Hyde last year. First 8 games of the season, he was the 33rd overall running back. But the second half, he caught fire, finished 11 overall at the position, and the underlying stats supported that as well. He finished 4th in broken tackles with 24 and 7th in yards after contact with 645. But again, if you draft Mixon today in the first round, he holds out. You got Le'Veon Bell 2.0 from a couple of years ago and Rodney Anderson waiting in the wings if that happens. And then again, you might get the bad Joe Mixon that we saw, or maybe this becomes a very pass heavy offense. So for as much as I love Mixon, he's clearly the highest, the riskiest player based on ADP for me. And you would think this guy could have been the riskiest player based on ADP, but I'm going with the most upside in AJ Green. I am banking on a bounce back for the 32-year-old, turns 32 at the end of July, still got some tread on the tires. He right now is going off 56 overall. That's around wide receiver 24. Now, we all know he missed all of last season, missed 7 games in 2018 and 6 games in 2016. That means Green has only played 9 games in the last two years. But If you extrapolate
those nine games,
okay, into a 16-game season, it comes out to 81 catches, over 1,200 yards, and 10 touchdowns. And AJ's last full season came in 2017 when he went for 75, nearly 1,100 yards and 8 touchdowns. So AJ Green steps into this suddenly very electrifying offense and is fully healthy, and you're getting him at wide receiver 24. He still has top 10 wide receiver potential if healthy. So I'm going to roll the dice in the, what is that, the mid fifth, 56th overall? Because wide receiver is so deep. If AJ goes belly up, I'll have someone on the bench, but the upside is certainly still there for Green.
You don't seem to have any hesitation about Joe Burrow being good and good early.
Some, but not any worse than Andy Dalton or who else played quarterback for Cincinnati last year.
We've had some Jeff Driscoll.
Yeah, about Jeff Burrow is he has pinpoint accuracy, and that's what he was really known for last year at LSU. Is he was one of the most accurate passers, especially downfield. So that should translate. I mean, that should even translate to the NFL. They get a good offensive lineman back. That's going to be a really good offense. It's going to be fun to watch. Plus, their defense is still terrible. So they're going to be playing four wide receiver sets.
And the
wide receiver you didn't mention is John Ross, who's a former first rounder who had a couple of great games last year, too.
And Auden Tate was a very good receiver when he got run, and now he's been relegated to like fifth option. So yeah, it's a deep team. Let's just hope Mixon doesn't hold out.
Joe Burrow, I think, is almost even money to win Rookie of the Year. In a stacked rookie draft.
It sounds about right. I think Tua would be in the conversation if Stewbeard wasn't there, kind of probably blocking him for the first 6 to 8 games of the season.
Burrow feels like the most pro-ready quarterback we've seen
in a long time, doesn't he?
There's been some good
maybe
ones.
Maybe since Andrew Luck.
He's in that tier,
it feels just like an automatic. And hopefully this is going to be a resurgence for the Bengals. Their fan base certainly deserves it. Let's go to Green Bay, Matt, where they had the opposite draft, a draft that was universally panned.
They listened to Paul Charchian. Do the opposite.
They really did. If we have a need on this roster, we're not going to address it. Damn it. We're taking the best player available no matter what. Let's talk about this Green Bay offense and how do you think that works overall this season?
So the really nice part about the Packers is there's not a lot of different options on the field in the passing game.
No.
You can narrow it down to two guys in the passing game that you will draft at all. If you don't get Devontae Adams, you can pretty much avoid all their wide receivers. And Aaron Rodgers is the other one.
You don't think MVS, just because they've jettisoned Geronimo Allison, they've got no real obvious answer at tight end.
Alan Lazard is the next highest guy. Yep. He's going off the board at 176. That's wide receiver 68. Mm-hmm. Then you got Devin Funchess there.
I'm serious. He won't be on the team.
That's why, for me, if I don't get Devontae Adams and I don't get Aaron Rodgers, I'm just out on the Packers passing game.
Okay.
On the other part,
do you see Aaron Rodgers putting up a substantially better season than last year?
You had all the reasons why not to take Aaron Rodgers, and he's going off the board at quarterback number 8 right now.
That's absurd.
77th overall. By the way, there's only 3 players on the Packers roster that are going in the top 13 rounds of fantasy drafts right now. Devontae Adams and Aaron Jones in the top 2 rounds, and Aaron Rodgers in the middle of the 8th or 7th. So, but the bad part is the running game is the exact opposite of the passing game. All 3 backs should be in the mix for touches, and we've touched on it a little bit before, and it's not going to be easy to decipher who's going to be the hot hand in any given week. So, I mean, we have A.J. Dillon, we have Jamal Williams, and we have Aaron Jones, and they're going at very different points in the draft. I should mention, overall, a very good offensive line. Green Bay had the number 6 offensive line, according to Pro Football Focus last year. Their line did allow pass rush pressure more often than 21 teams in the league. So Rodgers was under pressure
Such a wizard at getting out of that.
But it took them the most time in the league. It took 2.6 seconds for them to allow the pressure.
Oh, so Aaron Rodgers is holding the ball.
He's holding the ball too long.
Well, it's because Rodgers, you know, I think he's just...
it's because Devontae Adams was hurt and nobody was open.
Getting open. You could very well be right about that.
So here's my target is A.J. Dillon. He's a 250-pound running back with a 41-inch vertical.
I'm with you.
He's literally the heaviest running back in the NFL right now, and he has a top five combined vertical of any running back ever.
Go figure. He's, you know, for his vertical, he's 250, 250 pounds.
He's a goal line back who can literally jump over the defense.
Pile. Yes.
So he's the guy I'm totally targeting. And obviously, I'm avoiding Aaron Jones. We've harped on it over and over. Mm-hmm. He could get schemed out of game plans a lot this year. He was very touchdown dependent. And the Packers brought in Dylan as Jones's touchdown stealing vulture in his free agent year. They're going to let Jones walk after
Jones
this
is walking.
Year. So yeah. I'm avoiding Aaron Jones, and I'm getting out too early rather than too late.
AJ Dylan is a good back. You know, the issue, you know, for all the heat that Green Bay took for drafting him in the second round, mm-hmm. it wasn't because AJ Dillon's not good. It's because they had so much need at other positions.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're staring at the greatest second round draft for wide receivers in years, and you don't take one, stuff like that.
Don't draft for need. Just don't draft the best player.
Well, that's what they did.
Yeah,
that's what they did.
Sam, the Portland Trailblazers drafted Sam Bowie because they had Clyde Drexler. They didn't need Michael Jordan. Exactly. They needed a big, tall goof.
Last thing I'm going to say on Aaron Rodgers is, man, did he post dud games last year. So many games that clocked in at like 230 yards, zero touchdown, one touchdown. Those things murder your fantasy team.
Yeah, it's a bummer. And I chalk a lot of that up to Davante Adams just not being healthy for most of the season. Even when he was there after he came back, he wasn't fully there until the very tail end of the year.
Minnesota's got a new offensive coordinator, Gary Kubiak, familiar name. Last year's offensive coordinator, Kevin Stefanski, has gone to Cleveland, but the transition will be seamless because Stefanski was largely implementing Gary Kubiak's offense last year. Mm-hmm. Same terminology and everything else. So Kubiak is a wizard with fantasy running backs. He has unlocked massive seasons from...
I'm going to love this list.
Terrell Davis, Olandis Gary, Mike Anderson, Clinton Portis, Steve Slayton, Arian Foster, Justin Forsett, and last year, of course, Dalvin Cook. I went through 25 years of Kubiak runners as an offensive coordinator or head coach. It's basically impossible to find a talented runner who flopped in a healthy season under Gary Kubiak. If you are even a middle-tier runner, if you are Justin Forsett or better, and you're in a Gary Kubiak offense, you're having a good year.
Mm-hmm. Did Kubiak leave the year that some of those guys fell off? I mean, Slayton wasn't around a long time, but he was like a first-round pick the following year, and he fell off big time. Yeah, Justin Forsett was like an early-round pick. He fell off.
Yeah, well, you don't want to be there when Kubiak leaves. Yeah. I can tell you that much, because that runner the Olandis Garys of the world or whatever, he leaves, and all of a sudden that guy tanks. Mm-hmm. So you still feel really good about the running, and you know they're going to continue to run. Zimmer wants it, and Kubiak can do it. It'll be the second year implementing the zone blocking scheme for the Vikings offensive line. That should get better in year two, but they do have some moving parts here. They put a second round pick into presumed starting left tackle Ezra Cleveland, and that pushes last year's left tackle Riley Reiff to left guard. They have some question marks at right guard. So this is still going to be an offensive line that has some transition, but year two in the zone blocking scheme should get a little bit better. Assuming Dalvin Cook is playing, he'll be the team's most important offensive weapon, even more than anybody in the passing game. He'll get plenty of work, as I mentioned earlier. But here's your danger point, and this is why I've slid Dalvin Cook over the course of my preseason here. Mm-hmm. Down my rankings, the more and more I think about it, you know, between all the injuries he's ever had and the fact that last year he got to a point in December where he was just worn down from use, I really think that they're going to ratchet back the workload on him by 10-20% to try to keep Dalvin Cook fresher at the end of the season. And that part worries me. And I think Kubiak's going to integrate Alexander Mattison more often.
If you play in a team running back league.
Yes.
Minnesota's a great team to have.
It's a very good one there. Passing game is in flux with Justin Jefferson taking over Stephon Diggs' spot. But the two players are very different players. And Justin Jefferson isn't going to just become Stephon Diggs. Jefferson's primarily going to run from the slot. 80% of his college plays came from the slot. But I believe Jefferson gets immediate time in this offense because they don't have anybody else after Adam Thielen. Thielen becomes the go-to receiver for the first time in his life, really, as an extent, other than when Diggs would miss oddball games here and there. In the past, Thielen's production without Diggs has been uber inconsistent.
You don't think Thielen was go-to in like Pop Warner, First time in his life, he's the number one receiver.
Well, first time as a Viking.
No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
I'm busting your balls.
I don't think that the loss of Diggs ultimately helps Thielen here. I mean, Diggs took a lot of heat off of Thielen, and now Thielen's going to get double coverage virtually every play. So
they need
I'm
Justin Jefferson
here.
To basically replace Diggs.
They do, and he's good, and we're going to talk about him more in a minute. Diggs was among the league leaders in depth of target, and I think Thielen will do a little more downfield running than we've seen in the past. Second-year tight end Irv Smith gets a bigger role this year as well, but that pesky Kyle Rudolph's coming off a very good year, so those guys, I think, have middling fantasy value.
He's a tight end vulture.
Which one?
Kyle Rudolph.
Yeah, a little bit. So who's the riskiest player to draft from the Vikings? I think it's Adam Thielen. He's going off the board at round 3, wide receiver 10. He's expensive and hasn't proven that he can be a consistent producer without another wide receiver there to help, so I think there's some risk there. And who's got the most upside? It's Justin Jefferson, the first-round rookie, going off the board in round 12 and wide receiver 58.
Oh, wow.
Here's what he did last year at LSU. Justin Jefferson. Last year, in a college season, 115 receptions, 1,500 yards and 18 touchdowns. That's absurd. Absurd levels of production. He attacks the ball. Get this on his contested catch rate. So contested catches, these are plays. This is a ball that's thrown where either guy can come down with it, Justin Jefferson or the defender. Jefferson, a 92% contested catch rate. That's AJ. Nuts. That kid's going to be good. We'll take a break. When we come back, our final two teams as we examine the offenses of the North, the AFC North and the NFC North. We'll tell you about Chicago and Detroit, not Denver, Chicago. Well, Denver's sort of North. Chicago,
they're west.
And Detroit.
It's, like, it's really North, like in terms of elevation, it's north off the ground.
Let's go with that. Back in moments. Welcome back to Fantasy Football Weekly. Paul Charchian, Brian Johnson, and Matt Harrison with you. If you want to follow us on Twitter, I am at Paul Charchian. Brian Johnson is at BTXJ.
For sale, I would mention any corporations out there, BTXJ for sale.
Why would you want to give it up?
Did you know you cannot make four-digit Twitter handles anymore?
Well, no. Maybe there just aren't any. Maybe they just said,
they're not available. It says it needs to be longer than four.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
Brian's got a...
He's got a gold mine.
$1 billion industry right here.
Probably retire on BTXJ.
The X is going to be tough.
Yeah, the X makes it a little trickier.
You need at least two more to make something happen.
Matt Harrison is at Explosive Output.
Matt got it.
We turn our attention to...
I'm not going to talk about
the Chicago Bears, led by.
Are you sure?
Led? No, probably not.
Bled by.
Yeah. There will likely be a change of quarterback.
Mm, yeah. Nick Foles. The end. Yeah. Nick Foles. All right. Chicago. Nick Foles obviously added a quarterback. They brought in Jimmy Graham, the corpse of Jimmy Graham, to play tight end. Then they drafted Cole Kmet. Tight end.
I'm not exaggerating. I think right this minute they have 10 tight ends on roster.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous.
That's too many tight ends for me, the tight end lover of all. Kmet can't be right. How do you, is it just Met?
Kmet. I think it is.
Is it?
Yeah,
is it
yeah I got it right.
All right. Well, again, not talking about old Cole. I want to talk. So we expect Nick Foles to beat out. Thank you.
Sorry. Sad Trombonski.
And, you know, Nick Foles has never really lit up the scoreboard. He did it one time against the Raiders with the Eagles way back when.
Well, that was a 6-touchdown.
I think it was more like seven touchdowns.
Yeah, that was an amazing game.
He's never put up massive numbers. And the Bears, although their defense faltered big time last year, took a step back from 2018. This team is going to play defense, and they're going to want to run the ball and just
can they
limit the turnovers. Let's get to the running game. And David Montgomery.
Okay.
I'm hearing a lot of talk out there in the Twitter world about, like, people going to bat for David Montgomery.
Yeah.
He's RB20. Yeah. Look at all the touches. They didn't draft anyone. Mm-hmm. He finishes RB20. I want RB20 in my team. I don't want this RB20 on my team.
Yeah, not this one.
RB20, when you play all 16 games and average more than 15-plus touches, if you're finishing an RB20, you're consistently below average.
Yeah.
And he hit more than half of his games. He was outside of the top 30 at his position.
Well, it's possible the Bears are going to run, Montgomery and 9 tight ends on the field at any given time. So that might help with the blocking.
Whatever. Take that. He's RB20. He's played every game. He's going to see 200 plus touches. Throw it out the window. Do not touch David Montgomery. He's not a good football player.
All right.
He's not a good runner.
Now, can we agree that, and we've seen it many times, where rookie runners don't flash much that rookie year, but year two, they look like a different guy. Don't you think there's an opportunity for David Montgomery to be a better fit in this offense, to be a better athlete, whatever, the things that need to come together for him to be better. Better off, offensive line could and should be better as well.
I feel like the rookies that disappoint their rookie year tend to fall off the map entirely in the second and third year, more so than pop off. And Montgomery, all the underlying stats, all the overlying stats are awful. He can't catch the ball. He's probably the worst receiving running back in the NFL. Tariq Cohen's there, of course, but check out these stats for Cohen. Montgomery. 25 catches, 185 yards, and 1 touchdown. That's pretty bad.
That's his receiving numbers?
Yeah, on 35 targets. Mm-hmm. So if you use Pro Football Focus's yards per route run, which takes into account the number of snaps that a player runs a pass pattern, this provides a better indicator of production than yards per reception or even yards per target, they say. Montgomery averaged 0.77 yards per route run.
That seems really bad.
Want me to make it seem worse
for 0.7 yards.
Here are some numbers from running backs with similar final receiving numbers, like the 25, the pitiful numbers. Remember, 0.77 yards per route run for David Montgomery. Ronald Jones, 1.82. Rex Burkhead, 1.82. Shady Corpsey McCoy, 1.25. Patrick Laird, 1.29. Boston Scott, 2.34. Mark Ingram, 1.5. DeAndre Washington, 2.3. Montgomery doesn't get done. And I don't want to have this reliable suck face in my lineup, so I'm not drafting him. I don't care if it's RB23.
I'll give one silver lining for David Montgomery. He had a bad yards per touch on the ground last year. Mm-hmm. Only 3.6 yards per carry. But in his last 5 games, he had 4 games where he was above 4.3. So it seemed like he started to figure it out a little bit at the tail end of the year. They started feeding him the ball a little bit more. He didn't have the touchdowns in those last 5 games, but There was some signs of life there that he might not be completely terrible.
I'm out entirely. I see guys going later in redraft, guys like Todd Gurley, Jonathan Taylor, Raheem Mostert, DeAndre Swift, Kareem Hunt.
There's opportunity.
All day, every day,
I'm
taking those guys over. The problem is that is the problem. Yeah. When he gets the opportunity, that's the big problem.
Who's got the most upside then from the Bears?
My boy, Allen Robinson.
Yeah, he does. He's really good.
By the way, younger than Michael Thomas. Still 26 years old. Wow. Allen Robinson is. Right now going off the board as wide receiver 16, 39th overall, finished last year at wide receiver 10 with at quarterback.
That seems like a happy trombone if you finished as wide receiver number 10.
I'm so worried for Allen Robinson. Allen Robinson, by the way,
was happy.
That's a duck.
9 times.
Oh, there it is. We need a little map for the buttons.
I know.
Allen Robinson, again, finished top 10 wide receiver. His success rate versus man coverage was the highest among all wide receivers in the NFL last year. That's from Matt Harmon and Reception Perception. It's just the quarterbacking is the concern, but Nick Foles will be an upgrade for A-Rob. And again, he's getting drafted as the 16th wide receiver off the board, finishes a top 10 wide receiver last year. Why not?
Doesn't make sense.
Why can't he do it again? I just fear his career trajectory is going to, he's going to be a Hall of Fame receiver, but he's going to have quarterbacking like Andre Johnson had his entire career. Yeah. Or Larry Fitzgerald outside of the two, like Kurt Warner good years. So, but Allen Robinson certainly has a high upside. Basically.
Let's go to Detroit, Matt, where you and I have been in lockstep in almost everything so far this show.
Sure.
DeAndre Swift, so many people are down on DeAndre Swift because of how the Lions have used their backs in the past.
Mm-hmm.
I think DeAndre Swift is a special running back who will dominate the carries on this team. And let's find out.
We got to keep this quiet because it's because Kerryon Johnson's just not very good.
I was optimistic for him last year and it didn't work out.
He's better than David Montgomery.
He is better than David Montgomery.
Maybe. There are six super viable players on Detroit's depth chart for the offense. Detroit was one of eight teams last year that allowed more than 400 points on defense last year, which meant that their offense was pretty much always in catch-up mode.
Yeah.
And outside of drafting Jeff Okuda and adding Desmond Trufant at corner, but they did lose Darius Slay.
Yeah.
They pretty much stood pat with a really bad defense. So, there's a lot of good things that could happen with Detroit's offense. Number 11 offensive line, according to Pro Football Focus. Mm-hmm. Two top 10 offensive linemen at their positions with Frank Ragnow and Taylor Decker. So there's a lot of reasons to be bullish on the offense this year. Kenny Golladay is going off the board in the second round. He's a great wide receiver.
He should.
Here's my issue, and we're going to touch on it, as my player to avoid, who's Kerryon Johnson, who's going off at player number 76, RB 29.
Wow, that's so high for him, for Kerryon Johnson.
He's going as the 29th running back, wow, though, if you think about it. DeAndre Swift going one round later, pick 83.
Why would he RB go later? 32. That's absurd.
That's gonna flip-flop soon. Kerryon Johnson has missed 44% of his career games due to injury. He only had 10 receptions in 8 games last season. In 18 career games, he's barely topped 1,000 rushing yards, and his yards per attempt were a meager 3.6 last year. Yeah. And you have to take him above DeAndre Swift, who was arguably the best running back in last year's draft class.
Yes, that's all.
It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense.
So why don't we take the talent, because talent will win. Even if you think Detroit's coaching staff is a bunch of duds, talent's going to eventually win out. They might give Kerryon the job to start the year. I don't think he keeps it for very long.
No. And they could start Kerryon Johnson week one.
Mm-hmm.
Then in the third quarter, they give DeAndre Swift a handoff that he houses for 60 yards and, yeah, you know, blows by people like he did all through college. And that's the end of it. All of a sudden, your plans change.
Yeah. So DeAndre Swift's definitely a guy that you can target and you can get late. But my main target on this offense is Matthew Stafford, who last year was on pace for his best year since his 2011 season. He was on pace for 5,000 passing yards,
yeah,
38 touchdowns, and only 10 interceptions. Mm. And his completion percentage has remained very steady for the last 5 years, at right around 65%, give or take a percentage, one way or the other.
Yep.
He's got a good group of receivers with Golladay, Marvin Jones, Danny Amendola's no slouch as a third wide receiver. TJ Hockenson's a good tight end coming into his second year. Well, should probably take a step forward.
We assume he's a good tight end. Well, last year was a lost season.
Let's extrapolate week one for TJ Hockenson, right?
Yes.
Shall we? I like the weapons on this team, and even Kerryon Johnson filling in as a backup running back. I think it's a good offense that's going to be in catch-up mode a lot this year, and I like the Lions.
You didn't mention Marvin Jones, who is...
I did.
Did you?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
He's going off as wide receiver 39 right now, pick 93 overall.
That seems like there's some value there.
There is, definitely. Jones. He's going into a contract year as well.
There you go. Eight teams from the AFC North and the NFC North, broken down fantasy style, what we expect, who are the guys we're targeting, who are we avoiding. I hope you found this helpful. Next week, let's do the South.
You didn't want to mix it up?
No, I am sticking to the tried and true East, North, South, West that you always see these divisions in. I shouldn't be a slave
to that. It's alphabetical.
Though. It is alphabetical. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's not just East. It's not East Coast bias. Maybe that's it. It's just alphabetical. We'll look forward to that. If you want to hear about the AFC and NFC East, go to last week's podcast. We broke down those eight teams similarly, and I think even better than this week. I mean, last week was just brilliant.
Wow, really?
The feedback I got. Yeah, that was an amazing show.
Well, thanks a lot, Charge.
No problem. I think this was a lukewarm effort, if I'm just being honest.
Really?
Yeah. So right. We'll do better. We'll do better next week, and we'll talk to you then. Bye-bye, everybody.
Fantasy Football Weekly is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.